Hello, everybody. I'd like to welcome you all to the very first episode of the Everything is Okay podcast. My name is Brad Stair. I'm here with my good friends David Meggs and James Eisenhower.
What up?
How are you all?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you, James?
I'm doing well.
Fellas, I guess with this being the first episode, one of y'all can explain where the idea for this came from and kind of what your thought process with this was.
Yeah. So James and I, we go way back. And Brad, you actually go way back with us as well. What's interesting is we all grew up, at least for a considerable amount of time of our childhood, in Claremore, Oklahoma, outside of Tulsa.
Right, go Zebras.
Go Zebras, red and white Zebras. And
we were mighty.
Dude, we were mighty.
The Zebras.
We may have been around tigers and lions and bears and whatever else, but we were mighty and we had a mean face.
Right. Grr.
Grr in our face was... It was legendary.
I mean, the fact that we were red and white Zebras made it look like we were bloody, but whatever.
I hope that was intentional. I don't know. But so basically, we had this really strong friendship group going through middle school, high school, and then we went on our separate ways. Some of us are politicians. Some of us work in business. We got...
And like, some of us are me.
Some of us are James Eisenhower. Nobody's quite sure what you're doing with your life, actually. But this is one of the things, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
you were supposed to say something.
It
like
definitely is
either
good.
Start crying or affirm what I just said. Or
what if I sadly affirm somewhere doubles as both of those?
Yeah, no, I think that's beautiful. So James and I, and it's a long story, and I think over the next couple of podcasts, we'll probably jump on it a little bit. But we're in Hattiesburg, Mississippi now.
That's right.
Somewhat
on purpose.
Somewhat on purpose. Some people would say that God made it happen. I'm pretty sure he may have had something to do with it. But I bet we'll unpack that in our faith component of Everything is Okay.
I think some people would say God doesn't have a whole lot to do with anything in Mississippi.
That's true. Some people say that. So James and I were sitting on my porch in downtown Hattiesburg, and we like to talk about deep subjects that are kind of challenging. We like to just not go down rabbit holes, but actually dive head down and then see if we can make it to the top afterwards.
That's right. And Alice in Wonderland it.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland style. And I'm currently in a band. I have a full-time job. I'm married. We've tried, James and I. James has actually been a part of the marriage, which has been interesting. It's almost like Three's Company.
Yeah, I've been around a lot.
You've been around a lot.
I've made a tricycle of this marriage.
You have made a tricycle of it. And for us, we're like, it seems like there's only certain times that it's maybe appropriate to kind of dive into a subject and talk about it at length. A lot of us are tired. When we're hanging out, we want to hang out, but not always appropriate for us to dive down and talk about one subject.
Right.
And so the thought was, what if we created a platform where we could talk about faith, we could talk about life, and we could ask really difficult questions? And so that's kind of the basis or the foundation, at least, for what Everything is Okay could be about. And we have a blog, which is exciting.
We do have a blog.
And the podcast is going to be kind of the second leg of whatever this is. And if people start listening to it and enjoying it, then I think we'll probably just keep doing it.
Yeah, hopefully. We have a lot of opinions. We just need to figure out if people care what they are.
That's true. Which time will tell. Time will tell. So where does Brad Stair come into this little trifecta of magic?
You know, I think, you know, I'll just on my side real quick, the interesting thing about this whole thing is that I'm here in Oklahoma City. You know, I got married coming up on 3 years ago. And, you know, in the last probably 6 months, I've been going on a little journey myself when it comes to my faith, really trying to explore different topics. I was kind of starting to get, I wouldn't say bored with the just traditions that I was in, but I was starting to wonder, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? And so I started asking the questions of different topics. And I have a life group here that I meet with once a week. And I started suggesting that we really dive into some topics, whether they be controversial topics or they just be deeper topics, and really get into conversations. I've grown to love conversations. And so we started doing that here. And then over the 4th of July weekend, you know, I got a chance to go visit you, David. And we just happened to be sitting on a front porch in Kansas, basically having the exact same conversations that I was having with my group down here. And so that's kind of on my side where that came from. And I've learned to, every time I meet with people, I love to hear their side, regardless of if I agree or not. I find it very healthy. You know, that was kind of my side of this. And then, you know, I got the call from you guys to see if I wanted to join. And of course I did, because this is just what I love to do. So,
and it basically, I mean, you know, for me, Brad, it's hard to really describe you as anything other than a badass. So, like, you had to be a part of this. You
know, that's right.
I look at Brad and I'm like, how many skills does he have? And then James looks at me and he's like, what skills does he not have?
That's right. Basically, the Oklahoma Chuck Norris. That's what we've discovered. Yeah.
Even more attractive than Chuck Norris.
Absolutely.
So. Much more attractive.
Sure. Smaller belt buckles.
I can't do as many reps on the total, Jim, but I'm getting there.
That's true. But you're practicing and you're working towards it. You know, it's interesting, you know, for us, I mean, I guess I can't speak for everybody, but for me personally, I have a lot of friends who are Christian. I have a lot of friends who are agnostic, atheist, somewhere in the middle, somewhere floating. I've got some Muslim friends. I guess I'm collecting friends. But basically, for me, I wanted to have a platform and a podcast where we could talk about, is everything okay? And I think what we're going to be arguing is everything is okay.
Right.
And let's dive into why. And that may or may not look like the apple pie Christianity of the good old USA.
Right.
And I think what we'll probably posit is that it doesn't.
Right. For me, I also have a lot of agnostic and atheist friends. And sadly, most of them are that because of the church, not because of God. And so I think we just mostly want to be able to have a chance to tell all those people who are questioning that
it's okay.
We are too, and that's good.
It's okay to question.
Right. We believe in a God that's bigger than what we could understand. And so if we stop questioning, how can we understand him more?
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I think there's different camps of people. There's folks who aren't quote-unquote the I'm going to sit around and think until my brain explodes.
Right.
And I think those folks are going to find something hopefully tangible in this podcast as well. And then also on the other side, we're going to have like the quasi-intellectual, have you seen my books kind of people who are going to join this conversation, who are laughing at the church. And honestly, probably I'm laughing too sometimes.
Right. I just want the opportunity to basically have conversations with people in a way where we can not change their mind or even have that be the goal, but just to hear people out, because that's very cathartic and very important in having God matter to people, is that, you know, we listen. That's best starting point is caring what other people think.
So everything is okay. Faith, life, and questions. Brad, what do you think about that?
Man, I love that. In some ways, that kind of brings us to what this first podcast is even about. Earlier, I was telling you, there was basically, as I was growing up through high school and college, there was two main topics that I would tell people that I'm just not going to get into a conversation about. One being politics, and two being religion. And of course, whenever you guys got a hold of me, the first topic that you wanted to speak about covered both, which was an interesting journey in my own mind and heart to be able to get myself into a place where I would be willing to even give an opinion on. Because to me, when I was growing up, that was scary because all I saw was fights and a bunch of yelling and everybody trying to change each other's mind and nobody really having a conversation. So the fact that we are going to have this conversation is a big deal to me and something I'm really excited about.
So one of the other things, James and I were sitting around, we were like, holy smokes, we know so many interesting, different people. And a lot of them either grew up in Oklahoma or connected to us in some shape or fashion or whatever.
Right.
And one of them happens to be a pretty intense Republican who's actually trying to make real change in a way that he sees.
Right.
And we invited him on.
Yeah. I think a big thing in these conversations is that we're wanting to have conversations with people who we don't necessarily see eye to eye with.
Are you saying you're not a Republican? Because I thought all Republicans were Christians.
Right. Well,
I thought,
all Christians are Republicans.
We have to... They're Jesus.
Well...
This is about Jesus.
Right. I already know what I think. I don't need people to make me feel better about that. And so I want to have these conversations with people who I don't necessarily agree with. And... you know, want to make sure I care about what people have to say. I don't need to disagree with somebody on abortion and so not care what they have to say about economic policy. I don't think that's valid or healthy or anything at all. And that's sadly where we go, is that we find one or two subjects that either validate or invalidate other people.
I think as humans, especially in our society, like, we love to categorize, we love to put things in not three categories, not four, but two, right?
Right.
Like, it's a constant, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, Republican, Democrat, white, black, some other analogy.
Right.
That's what we're trying to do though, right? It's strange because the brain, like, it's what's comfortable for us, right?
Right.
Like, it's hardwired. You know, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma Sooners. We all know Oklahoma State's better though, right, Brad?
Oh, for sure.
Right. I mean, it's...
And we lost half of our listeners.
Right. We're trying
with
to...
that statement right there.
It seems like everybody tries to make the world binary. And, we're just all about adding some twos in there.
Yeah.
That's right.
Nice.
That's
a binary joke.
That's like some math for all you nerds out there.
Heck yeah. So, Brad, the question I'd ask, though, and this is the question that really helped us pull in Philip Jackson, who is our guest on this podcast for this episode, is Jesus in politics. Watch yourself.
Because there's one thing that none of us have heard enough of in these past few months, and that's politics.
I'm going to make America great again.
I've never been so excited about politics because I now realize that by the end of January, there's not going to be any more crime, and I could not be more excited about
that. I'm just so stoked that Trump is going to transform this country. You know, it's about time that we go back to the point where, I don't know, like, black people had to drink out of a different water fountain, right? Like, is that the past that we're trying to get to?
I mean, I'm just excited to know if it's going to be a 32-foot wall or a 50-foot wall. I think he's leaving us out there to dry.
Well, that will be determined by how Mexico does in the high jump during the Olympics.
That's true.
I heard that, yeah.
Oh, dear God.
I'm sure Trump is watching that going, oh, God, that's an extra billion. I said, like, it was going to be six. It's getting up to 20 at this point. Like, how am I going
to
explain this?
Didn't he say the Mexican president was going to have to pay for it? And then he got on, apparently, I think it was the president, and was like, hell no. Like,
well, the best is that the former presidents were like even more stern. There's no freaking way that I'm paying for this right. wall.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of former presidents, how about I think both of the Bushes, at least both of the Bushes, are distancing themselves, right, from the Republican candidate, a.k.a. Frumpy Trump.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, no. Why should people even care that we brought on Philip freaking Jackson?
Philip is a guy who is, I think, even in our childhood, is somebody that was always just a little bit, I don't know.
He was an old soul.
Yeah, he was an old soul. He got married. I mean, he got married early. You know, we all were just like,
He started a business at 18, was married at like, what, 18, 19?
18 or 18, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And
had kids when he was seven.
He had kids when he was seven. He definitely tucked his t-shirts into his jeans.
Absolutely.
With a belt.
For sure.
He made the realm of homeschool proud.
He did. He was a high achiever.
Like, when people homeschool their kids, Philip Jackson is what they're aiming for.
Yes, for sure. And I tell you, in all seriousness, he's a guy who we all respect his faith. He's been a man of character since we've known him. I respect his work ethic for sure. I've gotten, you know, the good fortune of being able to eat lunch with him a few times when he comes to Oklahoma City. And I'll tell you, the guy works endlessly. He cares. And so I think that is why Philip was the perfect person for us to talk to.
And I thought it would be interesting to get the perspective of somebody who's a millennial, right? And he's opted in to and really try to make a difference in the Republican Party. Which, let's be real, is not the easiest choice,
right,
especially for the younger generation, when we look at some of their policies and
you know. So he was the perfect choice. So I think with that, I mean, we can just jump right into our conversation with him.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And we'll see what happens. All right, so Philip, kind of go over, you know, what have you been up to? I know you did a lot with Steve Russell and things like that, but, you know, what all have you been up to the last couple of years? And we can start there.
Sure. So finished school and started a company with some friends of mine who were in political consulting. And we decided to try to help people get elected to office that, in essence, knew who they were. They were adults. Because the political climate in Oklahoma is, because of term limits, which is something I am vehemently against, our state is essentially run by special interests, lobbyists, and political consultants, and bureaucrats. And so we set out to elect good people who knew who they were, mostly conservative Christians, to office. And we've spent the last 3 years doing that and had some pretty good success along the way. We ran in 2014. Our first client was a congressman from Tulsa. Started out by raising money for him, doing his fundraising and organizing his donors, things like that. And we, from there, launched into seven different campaigns down from state house size, which is the smallest you can go on the state legislative side, all the way up to statewide. And we did a couple of congressional races. In 2014, we were able to win all of them, which was interesting because we went up against the established political interests. In our latest work, we did some tribal work last year, did the re-election for the chief of the Choctaw Nation, which had citizens across the U.S. in California, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, as well as Oklahoma. And then most recently, earlier this year, me and another colleague of mine were regional directors for Ted Cruz's Super PAC. We managed all the grassroots efforts on his behalf in Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma.
So we can all be on the same page, do you mind defining conservative Christian?
Defining conservative Christian. It's a two-part question. First, got to consider what is a conservative and what's a Christian. I'll start with the Christian aspect. One of the reasons why I gravitate towards a conservative worldview and through the Republican Party by extension is because it's built on the premise that I am responsible individually for my life. I individually am responsible for whether I succeed or fail. The decisions that I make are mine and mine alone. Although my situation may be less than ideal or ideal, maybe I'm born with a spoon in, silver spoon in my mouth, I don't know. But the core ideology is that it's built on the idea of individual liberty. Just like in the Christian faith, we all have an individual choice to follow Christ or to not follow Christ. That same facet carries over to conservatism in that individual liberty is where a lot of our ideology is built. And so with that comes a bunch of different caveats, but for the most part, that's how those two sync together. And so for a conservative Christian, the conservatism is built on a foundation of a Judeo-Christian faith and the idea of individual liberty and the responsibility, the personal responsibility and corporate responsibility that comes with that, being a part of a community or being part of a society. And then the worldview goes on from there. There's a lot of different facets, but for the most part, that's the core.
You know, having grown up with you, obviously you have you're a Christ follower and have Christian values. So how does that relate into, you know, your everyday dealings with just being a Republican and things like that?
Well, when I first started working in politics, one of the things that was surprising to me was that, you know, we hear a lot of negative things about people that work in politics, that it is a slimy world to work in and it's very nefarious. So there's definitely a major element of that. However, one of the things I realized is that there are a lot of really good people on both sides of the aisle that put in every day to try to make their community better than it was the day before. And so one of the things you have to remember is that we live in a society now, at least in this present moment, where we are incredibly divided, mostly, I believe, because of those that have the megaphones that in the media, both conservative and liberal, that make their living off of watching things in the arena play out. And so what they do is they try to stoke the fire of division to drive people apart so that they can then use that as fodder for their own viewership and their own traction to be able to sell more widgets or whatever, you know, so that they get more of an audience. And honestly, as somebody who studied journalism in college, it's really disheartening for me to see what the press has done by abusing their First Amendment right to exist. I mean, they are there to keep the government accountable, to keep the people informed, and to offer a perspective that is beyond reproach. And a lot of what I've seen in the last 10, 15 years is that they have, in effect, thrown away that gold standard for a YouTube-style political commentary, which is in effect, really hurt our public discourse. But you asked me about being a Christian and being in politics. I believe that we have a responsibility as believers to be involved in our politics. There are some people that they quote Romans 13 and they say, well, the powers that be are ordained of God and that we need to obey the powers that be and that whatever happens, happens. But the reality is that we are in the type of country in where we have a responsibility as citizens. If I don't vote, if I don't stay involved in the process, I essentially am turning my back on my core responsibility as a citizen. And so for me to not be involved is to be actually living contrary to what God has told me to be. You know, if I am a steward of this country, my family has been in the United States, at least the continental United States, for a very long time. I had ancestors come on the Mayflower. I have Native American blood in me as well, and so my roots are very deep here. But what it means to be a Christian and work in politics, basically, it just means that I'm an active citizen and I do my best to be a part of a community to make things better. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm trying to play the game. It means that what I want to do is I want to take the gift that my forebears gave me and number one, the very worst, not throw it away, the very best, try to make it better so that my children and their children can have a better life.
I think the thing that has recently kind of made me wonder if maybe we're looking at some of these issues, like, say, abortion, and the fight that you hear is whether or not a clinic exists or whether or not there's regulations on that clinic. But I wonder if sometimes we start to miss the mark a little bit because as Christians, instead of focusing on whether or not the clinic actually exists, it's more how can we minister to those mothers before they make the decision to go to the clinic, or after, if they do go to that clinic, you know, be there to wrap our arms around them, tell them that God still loves them. And that's kind of where I kind of start to wonder, have we missed the mark a little bit as to what we're fighting about? Instead of fighting for those mothers, why are we fighting, you know, just to whether or not a building exists?
What I think you're asking is where we stand, why are we fighting so many social battles and, you know, dividing people? On the abortion front, one of the greatest deceptions that the left has had, and also the right has made their fair share of contributions to the situation as well, is the idea that the abortion area or the abortion industry, I don't want to lump in all of women's health care in there because there's caveats to that, but the abortion industry is a money-making industry. I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that is made by companies that perform these services. And so for them, it's not about, I mean, you go back and read some of the things that Margaret Sanger said when she was first starting the genocide against African Americans when she founded Planned Parenthood, and it curls your toes because what they have done is they've created an industry that's funded by the government that is cloaked behind offering services. Now, for me as a conservative, or me as a Christian, now I'm going to throw conservative out. For me as a Christian, I believe that there is a time and a place for that procedure. And there is a natural progression. So when I was, a few years ago, I was walking through, you know, what do I believe about abortion? What are the limits that I personally, as Philip Jackson, believe? The Lord brought me a word, and I really felt like it's a logical explanation that, you know, a lot of conservatives believe that we have a right to defend ourselves. You know, if somebody breaks into my home and is going to hurt me or hurt my family, I have a constitutional and moral freedom and ability to be able to protect my family and take that person's life if necessary. And a lot of conservatives will agree to that. Yes, that's true. Okay, so now let's take away the element that person knows what they're doing. Let's say that person is either they're excited by a substance, or they're on drugs, or they're drunk, or say they don't have the mental capacity to understand what they're doing, but nevertheless the intent of them coming into my home will lead to deadly harm to me or my family. I am still within my right to take that person's life to protect my own. By in the same vein, taking that same logic, if a woman is pregnant and the child is a threat to their life or to their safety, that woman, as morally compelling as it is to save the child, it does not necessarily mean that either one would survive. And so the mother, in her own responsibility, because she will have to give an account to God based on her decision, she has the moral ability, the moral freedom to be able to make that choice. Now, if the child is viable and can survive outside the womb, I think absolutely the child should be saved and every effort should be made to save the child. But when it comes to the mother's choice, only in the case of the life of the mother would I sign on to that as far as my moral beliefs I've kind of explained to you my line of thinking. One of the things that we kind of talked about via text message before the interview was, what role does Christianity play in public policy? And should we be making decisions publicly based on religious preferences? The root of that comes from that I believe, and many other Christians believe, that human beings are not good creatures at their base. That being the case, there are certain rules that we need to establish as a society. And if I believe that, if I believe that there needs to be some parameters for us to live in order for everybody to live safely, then they need to be in place. And where those truths come from, I believe that a lot of that truth is in the Bible. Some disagree with me, but there are some universal truths like not killing your neighbor, not falsely testifying in court, things of that nature that we can all agree on. But that's why we have the society that we have. That's why we have the form of government that we have, so that we can have that debate and come together as a people and be able to make those decisions.
What establishes what is moral?
I believe there's a line between what I can do safely based on my own liberty and when I start infringing on the rights of others. I think that that morality is in that place, the place that divides between what I can do safely myself and what then affects other people. So if I violate somebody else's liberty, somebody else's ability to live freely, and I do damage to them, or I'm doing damage to society, I think the society has the authority to step in and be able to demand something different.
Which I think may be at the heart of the debate with specifically abortion. It's very easy for me or for other people to argue that we are infringing if the government is stepping in and saying whether or not you can do abortions. Like, obviously in my opinion, there needs to be a cutoff date of when life happens versus it doesn't. Because, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I've used a condom. And that's clearly, you could argue, cutting off the potential for life, right? I mean, it's the thought, I guess, for me of, like, when does... Like, what's that cutoff date, right? Like, what's that point
Sure.
where something is actually alive, right? And I think the debate on the pro-choice side of things is not, let's all get an abortion. I think the debate is, should a woman have the right or the option to do that or not? And should we regulate when that can occur or inconvenience when that could occur? Which I think it's an interesting thing to think about, you know, because, I mean, is that infringing on someone's rights? I'm pretty sure people can argue it is, you know.
I mean, it seems like from the definition of morality, it seems like that morality is dictated by social standards, not by a, like, God standard. So are they separate? Like, is morality something that doesn't have to do with God? Doesn't have to. In a completely atheistic society, is there morality still? Because if not, if morality is something that's dictated by God, and as Christians, like, we are supposed to be social beings. Like, we are supposed to, like, I feel like Jesus absolutely was all about causing social change through actually caring about the people who were the pariahs of society. And so that seemed like the way that he was dictating change. And I get that he didn't live in a dictatorship. There's lots of people pointing out, or he lived in a dictatorship, not a democracy. And so people say that's a loophole, and that since Jesus didn't have a vote, he went in a different route to establish morality or certain ways of treating people in society, whereas it's different for us because we can vote. And yet, historically, people tried to make Jesus king. He could have been the leader of the Jews. Didn't have to overthrow Rome at all. He could have just been the leader of the Jews and impacted his personal society. He didn't go for that. There was the opportunity to be the political standard for morality, and it seems like he went for more personal change for individuals. So I don't know, that's a lot of things to really be a question necessarily, but I guess in that I would sum it up in saying, like, is morality something that can be caused by policies, or is it a societal and individual standard?
I think that there is there's a couple things. When we allow society to dictate what morality is, I think that history would bear out that when we let that happen, individual liberty typically is not protected. to go back to David's point about when a life is a life, I mean, there are a lot of people that believe that it is infringing upon somebody's rights, the rights of the child. If the child's viable, they have a right to live. And so for the mother to step in and end their life would be a violation of the child's life. Now, if the there are some people that believe that, that life begins at conception, when the sperm meets the egg. So in that regard, I mean, using a condom wouldn't really apply. But the fact that the
artificial insemination is then abortion.
Some would argue that, yes. Because there's unique DNA created when a child is created. I personally believe that that's the case. But to go back to your question, James, on letting society be the moral compass, there have been societies that have sacrificed children to idols or to gods. There have been societies that have traded women like property. In fact, they still exist today. There are societies that don't value human life, and they still believe that slavery is okay. To let society dictate what morality would be, I think that over the last several millennia, mankind has shown, and it's borne out in our history, that there has to be a standard that is more than just what's comfortable within a community. There is absolute truth, and that when we start to deny that that's true, when we start to deny that that's real, then we start to make compromises. And I think that's a dangerous place to be as a society.
What's interesting, like for me personally, is that society and societies across the world have been using religious texts like the Bible to do terrible, terrible things, and have done it in God's name or Allah's name or you name it. And it's clearly when man's hands are on something, even the Bible, they can turn to crap real, real quick.
Right. I feel like faith should be a cause for action, not a justification of it. And that tends to be what we do, it feels like. Do something and then find a way to use scripture or whatever to justify what we did.
Right. And to your point, I think you're exactly right. We shouldn't try to justify our actions or justify our bias and go to the Bible or to the Quran or to the Book of Mormon or whatever and try to justify our behavior. Everything that I know about Christ, everything that I know about God is contrary to that. It's that he's the one, the scripture is the directing factor. I mean, that's the whole reason why we set up our government the way that we did. There's a reason why the First Amendment, the very first clause of the First Amendment is individual freedom of speech. I'm sorry, of freedom of religion. That we didn't want in this country to have an oligarchy. We didn't want to have something where we had a national religion. We wanted to be able to bear out these questions in the public square and debate them, and let's decide as a community what we believe and what we're going to tolerate.
Difficult for me in the approach to politics and everything is that I feel like it's tainted to me, politics, because of this view of morality dictating policies and all of that, and I fully believe that morality is not something that we should try to figure out. It's something that God has established. And if that's the case, and you believe Jesus is God, then like the things that Jesus said set a moral standard. And if that's the case, then I don't understand how to justify bombing people. I don't understand how to justify not turning the other cheek. I don't understand how to justify political systems that beat down the poor, the widow, the orphan,
the gay,
and build up anybody else. And even on that, the people who are LGBT or any other
disabled,
any other thing like that you can say, well, there's difficulty in the morality of that. Well, if you believe in the actions of Christ, then that means that you need to take steps towards personally loving that person, not condemning them. So it's, you know, that's the disconnect for me, is that I don't want my country to look like Jesus, because we're all going to be murdered if we all decide to turn the other cheek, to go the extra mile for our enemies. Like, if countries started finding out that America was all about, if Jesus we ask Christ. Him to do one thing, then they're going to do twice as much, we're going to go down quick. Like, I don't think anybody truly wants a Christian nation.
I think they may want a nation that looks like the warrior god of the Old Testament.
Possibly. But I feel like we want Christian citizens and a not Christian political system.
I can see that. I mean, there's a lot to what you just said. My philosophy with government, and this goes back to why I'm a conservative, is that I feel like government, I picture government like a stick. Okay, every 8 years, every 4 years, whoever's swinging it is going to change, whether it's Republican or Democrat. The goal is not who controls the stick. The goal is to keep the stick as small as possible so that it doesn't beat down other people. It doesn't beat down minorities. It doesn't beat down the poor or the oppressed. The government has very few and defined powers, but what has happened over the last 100 years is that as the world has grown more complex and as our nation has grown more prominent, our legislature has turned over a lot of their power to the executive branch, and they clamor to the judicial and ask for salvation. And so what ends up happening is that you have a pseudo monarchy where the executive branch just makes decisions and doesn't care about the people. That's why I think you've seen such a massive rise in participation for people like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. It's because people are furious. Conservatives are furious and liberals are furious that the government doesn't listen to them. And we don't need to be bombing people overseas that have no influence in our public policy. I mean, I personally think that there's a moral obligation to protect the frail and the defenseless. I think that that the Bible even talks about that. Standing up, pure religion, undefiled before God is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. The Apostle James talks about that. And we have a moral obligation to protect those that can't protect themselves. But there is a difference between protecting people and those that would use women and children as human shields or hide their weapons underneath a hospital or an orphanage and then kill women and children around the world with total disregard for the value of human life. For me, that's a really hard question to answer. But the reality is that government has a role. And when government gets outside of that role and starts playing favorites with people, that's when we start getting into issues where liberals and conservatives can agree. It's not about who's swinging the stick. It's about how big the stick is.
Something that's frustrating to me is that I don't think politicians or the political system is completely to blame for a lot of the issues that we have at this point. Because I feel like where we've gotten as a nation is that people like to get upset and push whatever they view morality as on every side of whatever political system. And the problem is people have gotten to the point where they don't want to do anything about the things that they say are make it or break it for their candidate. Like, they don't want to actually act on their morality. They want to vote their morality. And so people use politicians as almost scapegoats in that instead of trying to take care of the poor, I'm going to try and vote somebody in who he's supposed to take all of my responsibility towards the poor. And because of that, we put politicians on these pedestals, and I think that's why presidential years are like dog years. I mean, if you look at anybody who's been president, they age so much during their presidency because the country has put their morality on their shoulders.
Which is not biblical, by the way.
No, I absolutely agree. That's what I'm saying is one of my frustrations with politics is that it's not even the political system that's done it. It's that people, it's like, you know, the Israelites saying we want a king and God's being like, no, I'm you got me, and right. No, we want a king. And like, that's absolutely the way people act. Like, we don't want to take care of the mother who is trying to decide if she can afford to have a baby and is going to have an abortion if not. We don't actually want to take care of that person. We want policy to be written that she can't legally do it.
Right. Well, I heard something that I thought was interesting. Somebody said, I think it was James Lankford said, when the family shrinks, government grows. The reality is that there are some families that can't take care of themselves. There are dads who leave, teenage daughters that get pregnant, that the mom can't take care of their daughter that's having a child. You know, and sometimes, most of the time, it's a cyclical issue. You've got women who are grandmothers by the time they're 25, 30 years old, or great-grandmothers by the time they're in their 40s. There are systemic issues that are a problem in our society. And what we've done is that we have, in my opinion, tried to let the government fill that gap. While I believe there will always be poverty, there will always be tension, what we have done as a society is that we have turned ourselves away from our communities and into our homes. It's almost like we're going to lock the doors and we're not going to go outside because we don't want our kids to be tainted by the world. We're going to just turn on Netflix and just hope that things are better when they grow up to be adults. And we don't actively engage in our community. That's one of the things that I believe is uniquely amazing about the church, is that if a church is biblically run, if a church is biblically injected into a community, things change. Those women that are pregnant, they get loved on. They may actually have the resources that they need to be able to raise that child or to find a home for that child instead of deciding that they're going to end its life because they don't know what to do. And that's why, like in Oklahoma, for instance, there are 2 abortion clinics in Oklahoma. There are over 3,500 crisis pregnancy centers around the state of Oklahoma that offer resources to poor families, poor mothers that don't know what to do. Birthing resources, adoption resources, birth control resources. The answer is not always abortion. What I think is that when the community, when the church is doing what it's called to do, and that's invest in people, that is the perfect scenario. What happens is when we let government try to take over those services, it ends up being cold, it ends up being cerebral, and the people, the caseworkers that actually want to do the work and want to help people, they're put in an impossible position because they have a bureaucrat above their head that denies them the freedom to be able to take care of people because everything's going to be audited. Everything's going to be checked to make sure that the T's are crossed. No minority constituency is neglected, all that stuff. So what ends up happening is that you have a top-down organization trying to meet these needs that it is functionally impossible to do. And that is the fundamental problem with government trying to fix these things, is because government doesn't have the empathy and doesn't have the organizational elasticity to be able to do that.
So what's a like a good way to put a bow on this conversation?
I would say this. I said this to a reporter the other day, that like it or not, people are involved this cycle, this election cycle. First, let me say that you being involved in one election is not going to change the world. It's a lifestyle. You have to be involved in politics, whether you like it or not, because it's your responsibility. If you're a Christian, your responsibility is to be part of the solution. If you are not actively working on the solution, you are part of the problem. And if anybody who listens to this podcast, if they can look in retrospect and think if they've worked or volunteered for a candidate running for school board or for anything, worked in a campaign, if you haven't done that in the last 12 months or 2 years, you're part of the problem. Everybody needs to be involved, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, LGBTQ, whatever, you have to be involved in the process because this is our country. And if you don't let your voice be heard, there's a multitude of people who are willing to take your spot and use your bully pulpit for their own personal benefit. I see the movement of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders as a good thing in that it has brought people to the fight. And what we need to do is, as a country, we need to not be afraid of people who disagree with us. We need to be willing to hear people out and approach them in love. And to be able to acknowledge doesn't mean that we're going to agree with everything that they say, but let them have their say and then make our case. One of the things that I love about conservatism and about the Republican Party is, even though it's really messy sometimes, we are not afraid of the battlefield of ideas. And we're willing to have the debate and talk about the pros and cons And it's messy, yes, but at the end result, though, we're able to, number one, hold each other accountable when positions may change, but also we're able to make good policy. We can't be afraid of coming together and talking about issues. And so I would say the cherry on top of all of this, where we are right now as a country, is number one, I think that people are awakening to be involved. And secondly, I think that the true test for our country is going to be whether or not we hold our leaders accountable in Washington by staying involved. The worst thing that we can do is get somebody elected, throw them in the Potomac River, and think that they're going to do great in Washington. The reality is we've got to hold on to our people, we've got to hold on to our representatives, and be present in the moment in our communities. And if we do that together as a community, we can see progress. If we don't, then things are going to stay the same.
So that was our conversation with Philip Jackson. And, you know, as we said in leading into it, we couldn't respect anybody more than Philip Jackson. He's definitely a great guy. And the one thing I would definitely say is that that a big part of this podcast is not having people on that are just a sounding board for what we believe in. And so not everything that was talked about is necessarily all of our beliefs. And the three of us don't even necessarily agree on everything. But one thing that has been very important to me and has kind of pulled me into the, you know, ubiquitous political conversation has been the fact that we've been told by so many different people lately that as Christians, we have to vote. It's not a question. It's if you're a Christian, you have to vote. And I could not agree less. I don't think it's possible.
So why does it push your buttons?
I don't see anything biblically that points towards having to do that. I mean, the verses that tend to be used of loving your neighbor and all of those sort of things, I think a lot of it points towards making a difference with relationship, not with votes. I think Jesus absolutely was the manifestation of God having a relationship with man. And every time politics were brought up to him, he just confused everybody and changed the subject. Like he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I want to clarify that in that, I'm not saying that we need to not have anything to do with politics. I think it's good that some people, their life moves in a direction to where they can have an impact in politics. But to require everyone to do that, I think, is faulty. I think God has a broader plan for his people than for everyone to have a single requirement in something they do as far as like politics or a job. That would be like saying that everybody needed to be a teacher for at least 5 years of their life. That doesn't make any sense. Like, not everybody's going to be good at teaching. Like, I don't know. I just feel like.
But on the other, I mean, on the flip side, there's obviously no harm to being active in our civic, quote unquote, responsibility.
Right.
Of opting into policies, having opinions, exercising the right to vote, etc.
Right. I'm saying there's a middle ground. I'm not saying don't have anything to do with politics. I'm not saying you have to have anything to do with politics. I'm basically saying, maybe.
So James is the perfect example of apathy when it comes to politics,
basically.
Well, see, I think the thing that makes me question having to be involved just in the voting and the campaigns and the just complete rhetoric that comes out of that is people think that that is the way to be involved. And if you're not involved in that, then you're not involved at all. What I read from Jesus or Paul or anybody in the Bible was more about, regardless of the outcome of the election, whether your candidate gets elected or not, you know, not freaking out.
The other side of it too, though, is, you know, where I would push back a little bit on what Philip was talking about, and I think he meant this as well, though, is being active in your community or being active in local politics or state or federal politics, it can look a lot of different ways, right? Like, if we are active in our communities, and I'm not talking about just our church or just our neighborhood or just our friendship group, but when we're reaching out and trying to make a difference in other people's lives, when we're serving other people, which I would argue that's what Philip's doing in a different way than maybe James and I or Brad, like, that's being active in, you know, your civic duty.
Right.
It maybe it doesn't look like knocking on doors and advocating for a certain politician.
Right.
But you're looking outside of yourself.
Well, the way I see politics and the way it's designed and what its goal is it's a reaction to the culture. It's a reaction to citizens. And it's deciding what we are and aren't allowed to do in response to each other. And so, if that's the case, then should there be people who are a part of the reaction to culture? Yes, that's what politics is. But are there also people who should be trying to strictly interact with culture? I feel like all of us should be trying to interact with culture. That we should be trying to change the lives of the people in our town, our city. We should be interacting in a way to where our policies on, you know, welfare don't matter anymore. Because if we find a way to take care of the poor, the disabled, the widows, veterans, all of these groups that end up on welfare or on the street, if we take care of them, then the policy doesn't matter anymore. And so I would say that's the important part. But I feel like that's what people who are pushing the necessity of politics on Christians are trying to say, is that we need to be involved in changing the culture. I'm just saying I'm okay with just interacting with the culture instead of having to police and be involved with the reaction to culture. But I do agree that there should be some people involved in the reaction to culture, which is politics.
It's just not going to be you.
Nope.
It was interesting to hear his perspective. And I absolutely see his viewpoint in the sense that we should be active in our communities. And there's absolutely some pros to being active in what policies are being written, etc. What I do have a problem with is us using the pulpit or using Jesus Christ to back up or to advocate a certain politician over another politician, which unfortunately I think is probably way more rampant in the United States than I care to admit. And I'm going to go ahead and throw the stop sign up on that. I don't want to see that. I don't think that's the place for a spiritual leader to necessarily get up. Like, what happened in the, oh my gosh, I think it was in the Republican convention. I think Philip talked about it a little bit, but that guy getting up and basically praying against Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, yeah, advocating, advocating she was evil.
Freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, that's just, there's no place for that.
Are you kidding?
There's no place for that.
No.
To be fair, both sides have thrown up prayers that would probably make Jesus collapse sobbing.
Right. You know, I thought another thing that was interesting is when we were preparing for this, one of the things I did is I went to some of my friends here and I kind of got their opinion on this. You know, I wanted to hear all sides from all different people. And I had a couple good friends and we were sitting around a pool talking one day, and one of them mentioned how they watch both conventions and not only the conventions, but they watch the debates. And in both debates for the Republicans and the Democrats, somebody asked the question, do you believe in Jesus? Are you a Christian? It wasn't even, do you believe in Jesus? It was, are you a Christian? And whoever was telling me this was bothered by the candidate's answer. And I sat there for a second and I listened to that and I thought, you know what bothers me? The question. Because what does that have to do with those candidates right now? You just got done talking about economic policy. What does that have to do with that? And I know it's an important question to voters, but is there a place for that? And I would question that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if it was an article or a podcast that I was listening to, but or reading, they were just talking about how like America is synonymous with Christianity. Do you know what I'm talking about, yeah. James, with that? And my question is, say what? How is that even possible? Right. When I think about,
I mean, it's a what fair do we question. Mean?
Like, I know
as
there's
long as you answer no.
And you hit, James, you hit on it too, though, but you were in the actual interview where you're talking about, I don't know if I want a country that looks like Jesus from a political standpoint.
No one does.
No one does, because that, it's like it's basically socialism, right? Like maybe
it's not even socialism. It wouldn't work. Like it just, it's, you can't bow to everybody.
Yeah, and turn your other, you know, turn the other cheek, give up everything, be a vagrant.
And I feel like the response to this interaction, something that my brother was talking to me about in Joshua, just before they went and fought against Jericho, when Joshua saw what most biblical scholars would say was probably Jesus holding a drawn sword, and he walked up to him and said, are you on our side or are you on their side? And he said, no.
What a great answer, right? Like, are you voting Republican or Democrat?
No. I just,
yeah.
We like to try to act like Jesus picks sides when Jesus died for everybody.
Yeah. I don't know about y'all, but I'm trying to fight fear, right? Like, we turn on the TV, we watch politics, we watch CNN, Fox News, you name it. There's so much fear. So much fear being reported, because fear sells, right? Like, sex sells, fear sells. Hope, on the other hand, it works if you're a powerful orator like Obama is, because that worked. But it's a lot easier to sell fear, right?
Right.
Like, fear this, fear these people coming into this country.
You know, it's a lot easier to convince people that they have a problem than it is to convince people that you have a solution.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess when I look at Jesus in politics, I think for me personally, it's your answer. No, not really.
Right.
I'm not seeing a lot of Jesus Christ's example in politics on either side of the fence.
I think Jesus would absolutely love every side.
Yeah.
And he would make everybody else really mad.
What were you going to say, Brad?
Well, actually, I was going to say, so if one of y'all were able to you know, sum up all of this, you know, what would you, where would you go with that?
I feel like if we had Jesus here right now and asked him, which candidate can fix this nation? I think he would say, I can.
So Jesus for president?
Basically. I mean, write-in votes.
Write-in vote, write-in Jesus Christ of Nazareth. You know, or would Jesus, instead of answering your question, just tell a really confusing story?
Absolutely. He would tell us a story about farming conditions in Oklahoma. And then walk away.
Oh man, that's great. Or he'd be at both conventions handing out water.
Absolutely.
And giving hugs. And loving. Loving Black Lives Matter movement. Loving the Tea Party. Loving Sanders. Loving Trump. Which, woof. That's, yikes. If you've enjoyed this and you want to hear more, please go to iTunes and look up Everything Is Okay. We're also keeping a pretty active blog going on at www.everythingisokay.net. And we also want to hear from you, right?
Absolutely. So we have a fan page that's probably on Facebook. That's probably the best way that you can get a hold of us. We'd love some feedback of comments on what you think of the blog, what you think of the podcast, ideas you might have for future podcasts or blogs. And if you go to facebook.com/everythingisoklahoma, then you can find our fan page and like us there. It's a great way for us to know if people like what we have to say and think our opinions matter is for us to get likes on our fan page and subscriptions on our iTunes. So please help us out with that.
For this episode, we'd like to feature David Gregory as our artist spotlight. David is good friends with James and was actually roommates with him for a while in San Antonio. David and his wife, Kate, now live in Dallas, and they recently released an album called Before the Wolf Comes Home. Here's one of the songs from that album. So with that, we'll sign off. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
And I'm James Eisenhower.
Everything is okay, people.
You plucked me out of the sky, tied down my wings so I couldn't fly. But I fell low on the ground. It's harder to sing with your head in the clouds.
Every piece we stole taught us that love burns the air in our love.
stone that you cast left a mark, my love, bone of bone, flesh of flesh, you gave over. I caught a glimpse of the sky, remembered a time when I used to fly. Your presence lingers like smoke, proof of the fire, now just a glow.